You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. I am Josh Furlong, joined as always with my co-host Josh Newman. Josh, it's the afternoon. How are we feeling?
Feeling all right, man. Things got a little busy there in the last half hour for you and I, but I think we're going to get to that a little later in the show here.
Yeah, we have a special guest joining us today, and the only reason we're bringing her on is because she's an expert in football. She's a 49ers fan, so she's got that going for us. But we've got Lynn Roberts, University of Utah women's basketball head coach. Lynn, how are you doing?
I'm great, Josh's. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Go Niners.
Of course.
Go Niners. I can't say that. The Cowboys are playing them this week, so I have to be I can't say that.
Oh, come on, man. You know what's going to happen, but it's okay.
Oh, geez. Just cutting deep. Before the show, you're digging deep on Josh with his Jets hat. You know, I mean, this is...
You're killing me.
I do what I can. I do what I can, boys.
That's good. That's good. Well, let's jump in. Basketball season, you started practice last week with your team officially. There's summer conditionings and other things going on, but you now get the opportunity to be able to be with your team. Just kind of break down for us what, you know, what's new with your team, who are the newcomers, and kind of go from there.
Yeah, it's crazy that basketball season is here, isn't it? Like, it's bizarre. The NBA games are playing in Abu Dhabi, and like, it's crazy, but it's a good crazy. I think our season ended on a high note-ish last year. I mean, we had a great season, and it kind of springboarded us into the off season. And I think, you know, we return our starting group last year that won 27 games, and we've got the bulk of our group back, and we're excited. I think, you know, we have some new guys in that are going to help us. And, you know, I've done this long enough to know, though, that everybody's undefeated in October and everybody's feeling great and the optimism's always high. And, you know, we're looking good. We're looking better. But there's a long season ahead of us, and we just got to chip away at it.
Lynn, when you talk about the optimism, obviously there's a lot of, you know, way too early top 25 polls going back to like right after the Final Four, right? Those things come out immediately and they come out throughout the offseason. And the ESPN way too early top 25 has you guys at number 5 preseason. Do you take any stock in that at all?
I mean, not in terms of, you know, I don't know how accurate those things are if you compare where everybody finishes with where they were predicted. But I do take stock in it, and that, you know, my objective in taking over this job was to make our program nationally relevant. And I think, you know, we've done that. And so I take stock in it that way, but not in any way of like, we've arrived and we're going to finish there. You know, our goal is to go as far as we can and go farther than we did last year and, you know, try to make a Final Four. And that's a big task. And like I tell our team, you know, doing great things is really, really hard, and you got to get lucky and you got to stay healthy. And a lot of things have to bounce your way, but I think it's possible with this group. And so we're just going to focus on that. And, you know, I'm big on process and all the other coaching cliches, but they're cliche for a reason. Like, you got to stay, you know, just where your feet are at and not get too far ahead of ourselves. But I take stock in it, in that I think that we're getting the recognition that we've been working so hard to get, but now we got to prove it.
Lynn, you've always talked about how difficult this Pac-12 is. You know, it doesn't get any easier every year. Mm-hmm. You split the conference championship with Stanford last year as co-champions in the regular season. Just what do you see from this Pac-12? Obviously, it's the last year of the Pac-12, but at least the way it's currently constituted. But what do you see coming into this year's campaign?
Well, I honestly think, you know, we have our media day on Tuesday, and we have a head coaches group thread with the coaches in the conference. And I honestly think it's the best it's ever been. If you look at the talent for our league, it's ridiculous in a good way, and also in a competitive, scary way. There's no rollover team from top to bottom. It's competitive. And, you know, that's been the case since I've been here, but I think every year it's gotten a little bit better. So it's unfortunate for a lot of reasons, but it's unfortunate that this is the last season for Pac-12, but particularly in our sport where we have established ourselves as the best league in the country, it's a bummer. So, but it's kind of, you know, poetic that this last year of how it is probably going to be the most competitive.
And just kind of staying on that topic, I mean, is there something to be said now, again, with a veteran group and you guys accomplished a lot last year, a lot returning, is there something to be said that you guys are now essentially the hunted and not the hunter?
Yeah, I you know, that's kind of a shift in thinking. And I think we can't get caught up in any of that. It's hard to do. And as a player, you know, it's harder. But I think we've relished in that underdog role. And I still kind of see us as that, where we still have to prove that we're worthy and we still have to prove that we are legit. And it wasn't, you know, one hit wonder. And that's kind of how we've approached it. Our players still have a chip on their shoulder, which is good. So I think my personality and the personality of our team is we will maintain that kind of underdog role. I mean, we've got obviously great talent, but we don't have, you know, we're not the flashy team with the big splash, whatever. You know, we're a group that's the, you know, we're good because of the sum of the parts. And yes, we have some individual pieces that are really good, but I think what makes us great is that we're not, you know, we're not a one or two dog trick. It's we're everybody. So, and to that end, I think that kind of relishes that underdog role.
You know, culture is always kind of thrown out as the buzzword in athletics, and, you know, coaches always want to talk about the culture. Few can probably back it up. I think you've been able to back it up the last few years, and just, you know, you've tried, you know, over the course of the few years to be able to get different people in and try to make sure that your roster fits what you're trying to do. Where do you feel like you're at right now, especially as you are the hunted now, and you've got people that are trying to maintain that while still being college athletes?
Yeah, it's different. It's a mindset shift. And the thing with our team right now is we're deeper than we've ever been, and it's incredibly competitive. Kids that played, you know, limited minutes last year are expecting to play major minutes this year, and they've worked and they're looking really good. So it's going to be, while we have all five starters back, our starting five isn't set. It's competitive, but I think that plays into, again, that we've got to stay hungry in our practice gym and compete with each other and then just let the outcome take care of itself. But this group, they want to be great. They want to do things that have never been done in this program's history. And so that's encouraging to me.
Lynn, can you kind of take us through the process of creating the non-conference schedule, but specifically how the South Carolina game on a neutral floor came about?
Yeah. I mean, you know, as well as I do, that scheduling is a science and it's not an exact one. And you got to schedule to what you think will push your team and prepare it for league play, but you got to schedule, you know, you don't want to overschedule. I will tell you this was the hardest year to schedule we've ever had by a long shot. No one wanted to play us. You know, when I took the job 8 years ago, people wouldn't stop calling like, "Hey, you want to play? Want to play? And now we can't get anyone to play us. But that game, the game you're talking about, Josh, in Connecticut, that's a ESPN kind of sponsored event. And they're just doing kind of a showcase for women's basketball. And they called us and asked if we'd be willing to participate. And we jumped on that. We didn't really know if they, you know, when they asked us if we were interested, we didn't know who we were going to be playing, but we knew it was going to be somebody good. And then shortly thereafter, we found it was South Carolina. So what a great test for us. I mean, obviously, they're, you know, at the elite of the elite, and we play them on December 10th. So we'll have some games under our belt before that, but still early enough in the season for us to be very, very tested. That's a different style of basketball in the SEC. They're going to be way more athletic than we are. But I think we'll, you know, we're a better skilled team in terms of shooting. I mean, historically, so it's going to be a great game. So, we play them, and UConn plays North Carolina, and then UCLA plays Florida State. So three games. I think we're the final game on that Sunday. So we're excited about that. And again, it's one of those games too, where you want to win. We're going to do everything we can, but there's not a pressure. It's not the tournament, but it'll be a tournament like game. If we advance in the NCAA tournament, that's going to be a great game we can pull from.
Sticking with that a little bit, you know, women's basketball, especially collegiately, kind of had a breakout year last year, at least nationally, right? I think there was a lot of interest. If I remember right, there was, what, 9 million people on that championship game.
9.9.
There you go. Almost 10 million.
Almost
you know,
10.
that does matter, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. There's been a turning point, right? Like the game has always been good. And, you know, we've talked about that with you before. But in your view, what do you see as maybe changed? Why are people more interested in it now? Has the game changed? Is it the athletes? Or what is going on in your view?
Yeah, I do think the game has... I mean, personally, obviously, I think the game's been good for a long time, but I do think it's better. In the last 10 years, it's gotten more athletic, more skilled. The athletes are bigger. You know, I think it's developed pretty quickly in the last 10 years. I do think one thing is in women's basketball, you don't have players leaving early. You know, we have to deal with the portal, not quite to the extent as men's basketball, but pretty substantially, you know, we being college women's basketball. But we, you know, the true studs in men's basketball, they're one and done, right? And so if you're a blue blood Kansas fan or Duke fan or whatever, you know, I remember back in the day, you turn on a game on a big Monday or whatever, and you know some of the guys, even if you're not a Kansas fan, but it's like, oh yeah, I remember him or whatever. And now that's not the case. So a lot of these programs, they've got a new roster every year. And I think that's hard for fans and for viewers. I mean, if you're a diehard, you're going to watch and be a fan no matter what, but just the college basketball fan, it's kind of hard because you just don't know any of the guys, or somebody that went to X university now is at Y, and you just, you know, with the transfer. And I think in women's basketball, we've, you know, you can't leave early to go to the W or to go professional. I mean, you could go play in Europe, but in terms of the professional league in the United States, you don't graduate early to go, or, you know, 1 or 2 years and go. So I think there's been some continuity with players and rosters that can get fans and the average spectator to follow more closely. And I think you've seen some of the big personalities in women's basketball, the Caitlin Clark from Iowa, Angel Reese from LSU, Haley Van Litt. Like there's personalities, Cameron Brink at Stanford. I think Alyssa Peely on our team is gotten to that, you know, getting to that level. So I just think fans are a little more engaged with the players in that regard and the continuity of it.
Can you just expound on Peely a bit? Obviously, you know, you just listed her among the other elite names. You know, what has put her there among those, and what can really push her forward to be, you know, higher up on that tier?
Yeah, she's elite. I mean, she is so unique, and anybody that's watched us play, there's something about her that's just kind of unforgettable. Like when you watch our team, I can't tell you how many people that, you know, maybe came to some games for the first time last year, that's who they wanted to talk about. And we've got some great players in our, you know, we average 88 points or whatever, but that's who they want to talk about. There's something about her that she kind of has that it factor of marketability in terms of eyes on her. But, you know, last year she shot, I want to say she was almost an 80-60-40 shooter. So I know she shot above 80% from free throw line. And then just under 80% from the free throw line. And then she shot 62% from the two and 43% from three. I mean, have you ever heard of an 80-60-40 that averaged 22 points a game? Like, it's just kind of unbelievable. So she looks good, though. I'll tell you, she had a great summer. She knows that she's being watched for the draft. And I've already had a lot of, you know, conversations with GMs about it. She'll get drafted high. But, you know, the cool thing about Peely is she wants to win. And she's not going to force the issue for her own personal gain. I think she understands that the better we do, the better she looks and the better she plays.
There was a lot of attention on Jenna last year at the end of the season, just because of those missed free throws. Obviously, it's heartbreak. You know, you put your arm around her and gave some words of comfort. I mean, what have you seen from her moving past that? I know it's not just the story, right? Like, obviously, there's more beyond that. But I think from the national standpoint, that was kind of like she became the focus. What have kind of you seen from her moving on beyond that?
You know, she, and I've said this, but she's a spectacular kid. And you know, I've told the story, but after that game, you know, just you felt what I felt in terms of you just, everybody's heart broke for her. She also got some really bad stuff on social media. People are pretty cruel. But that's sports. I mean, that's the way it is sometimes, unfortunately. And walking to our plane after the game, the next day, I put my arm around her again. I'm like, "How you doing, JJ?" And she said, "You know, I'm glad it was me, because I know I can handle it." And that kind of encapsulates her. Like, she's just steady. But it was hard, you know, but I haven't seen any change in her, in terms of mentality. If anything, I think it galvanized her to be, even more steady, even stronger, even more reliable. And I'm looking forward to that moment, that redemption moment for her. I know that game's going to come, you know, it's going to make sense at some point. But I look forward to, and I have absolutely zero doubt that she will have that redemption moment at some point in a critical time this year.
Of course, you're worried about this season and one more run through the Pac-12, but, you know, out on the horizon is the move to the Big 12. Do you or your staff, are you paying any attention or doing homework in terms of, like, how those Big 12 teams operate, how you have to tackle recruiting, if you have to do it differently? Are these things being handled at all in the middle of trying to get ready for a season?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you do have to be careful not to look too far ahead, but yeah, Josh, we're definitely tracking. And, you know, we did some, I did a comparative analysis. You know, I'm a nerd at heart and I love the numbers. So I did a comparative analysis of kind of where we would have stacked up last year in the Big 12. And every offensive category, except for, I think, threes made, we would have been first in the conference offensively in the Big 12. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to be first in the conference. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I think the I think we're built to succeed there. But we also know that it's going to be a little bit different, and we're going to be the new kids on the block. And with that comes adapting and, you know, new arenas and new travel and all the things that can kind of foul up what the confidence that comes from a routine and a predictability. But I'm excited about it. I you know, no one asked me what I thought before the decision was made, and that's fine. That's the way it goes. And so we're just rolling with it, you know, like let's go, let's roll with it. And quite honestly, our recruiting, it has helped our recruiting a little bit already, because we recruit so much. We've had so much success with the Midwest. The Big 12 kind of plays into that better, and Texas and Kansas, Oklahoma, like we recruit there a lot. Those kids identify with our program and kind of how we do things. And so it's helped us, because we're, you know, a lot of times kids who are recruiting, we're the farthest east school that they, you know, everything else is west of us. And so for families, it's even farther. So it's helped us in recruiting, just that we're not going, you know, that their kids not going super far away, or playing super far away. So I think all in all, it's going to be a good thing, and we're ready to go. And yes, we're definitely watching those teams and looking at those rosters a little differently now.
Recently, the NCAA changed a rule that allows you to be able to have more coaches on your staff, assistant coaches. You brought in Jeff Judkins, obviously a longtime BYU head coach, Utah alum. What was that conversation like? How did you get him in the room, and kind of what's he been for your coaching staff so far?
Yeah, Juddy's awesome. I've always been a big fan of his. You know, when I was at Pacific, he was at BYU, same conference. So I got to know him there. And we always had a good rivalry and just a lot of respect for him and how he coaches. And so when he left BYU, you know, a year and a few months ago, I reached out then. We didn't have the position as it stands now, but I wanted him to be involved somehow. And he wasn't ready. He just, you know, he needed some time, which I respect. But I kept kind of watering the seed, met with him a few times during the year. And then when that rule passed, then I really, you know, I went to Sharmell Green and Mark Harlan. I'm like, this is what I want to do. And they were like, awesome, go do it. And so I just, you know, tried to, we've had a lot of conversations about what it would look like and, you know, what would the roles be and expectations. And then, you know, he committed to doing it, which was awesome. But he's been great for me. I mean, he's great in all aspects. I would say the highlight for me is just having another head coach that, you know, and he's experienced. He's coached more games than I have. And, you know, it's just nice to have someone in the room that kind of understands the nuances and the challenges, or, you know, and just kind of getting a pat on the back from him or whatever. But he's a great guy, and he's, you know, he's working with our post players and just kind of, I think he's just kind of learning and asking questions and just being around, but just a great resource for me as a coach and also our players. And then just to have just a kind of beloved Utah alum and a storied one on our staff and in our program is awesome.
Lynn, any thoughts on the NCAA coming out, I guess it was yesterday, shrinking the transfer window from 60 to 45 days? Does that impact what you're trying to do in the portal at all?
Yes, I think it's a good move. I think I understand the both sides of the argument. You know, you could argue it either way. I do think it's a good move. Just it makes kind of programs and players, I can't think of another way other than say, blank or get off the pot. Like, what's another way to say that that's appropriate for a podcast?
Crap, I don't know. We can beep it. Yeah, we can okay, do what okay. we need.
Fisher cut bait.
There you go.
It kind of makes you have to fish or cut bait, which I think is good in the long term. It'll work itself out to where players, you know, at the end of the year, you either want to stay or you don't. You maybe have a few weeks to decide, but it shouldn't take longer than that. And coaches, like, don't mess with a kid. And you know what I'm saying? Like, I think it'll just expedite the whole thing to where we as coaches can focus in on our rosters. Because the hardest part with the portal now is your season ends and you're immediately trying to retain your team. And then you find out who's leaving and then you're mad rush recruiting to try to fill it. So April used to be for basketball coaches kind of a chill month where you can catch your breath, maybe go on vacation with your family, meet with your team, but give everybody a break. And now April's become the worst month. I think every college basketball coach would agree. And that's, it is what it is. I'm just saying, I think it'll help not draw out this process for players and for programs. And I think it works both ways. I think it'll help the players, even though I understand the argument of what people are saying, I do think it's a good thing.
Well, thank you so much, Lynn. We appreciate your time. I know, you know, last year you were especially trying to fill the Huntsman, and especially at the end it got really big. There was a large crowd. What's kind of your pitch to fans right now, just, you know, getting them into there to watch your team?
Yeah, I think we showed last year that we have a product that's fun to come watch and an atmosphere that's you know, very family friendly. And we have a lot of, you know, we sold more new season tickets after the season was over for this year than we'd ever sold total in years past. So I think there's like 4,000 lower bowl seats left for season tickets. And my vision always has been to have this place be one of the best atmospheres for women's basketball in the country. And last year, at the end of the year, we were. But I want to sustain it. And we've got a great team coming back. And the thing about this group is they love the U. They love being Utes. They love Salt Lake City. There's a lot of pride. And I think when you come watch a game, you can see that. But it's a, you know, there are season tickets. They're $50, which is pretty cheap for 16 home games. And I would encourage people to please get those season tickets and let's keep this thing rolling. You know, I want to win a national championship. And a huge component of that, it goes hand in hand, is having a home. Look what football's doing with their home atmosphere. I mean, that's a brutal place for teams to come in and play down there at Rice-Eccles. And that's because our football team's very good, but it's also because the fans make it very hard. And, you know, we didn't lose at home last year, and that was in big part because of our fans, and we would love to have that atmosphere grow and continue.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it. I know you're busy, and you know, you got to go watch the 49ers beat the Cowboys, right?
No. Never too busy for you guys, well, but I appreciate you having me on and covering the Utes and all the good stuff you guys do. So thank you.
Thank you
so
much.
Thanks so much, Lynn.
All right. Go Niners.
Yeah. It cuts every time, but you know.
You know what? I really like Lynn Roberts. She's been good to me since I've been covering Utah, and I think she's very candid and very open, certainly more so than someone like Kyle Whittingham, someone like Craig Smith. But I really didn't appreciate the dig at the Jets camera before we started recording. Like, was that necessary?
It was deserved.
Okay, we'll go with that.
You got to be able to have that. The Jets, they're in dire straits, right? So
they are. And so am I. So let's be honest with it.
That's right. All right, well, let's just jump into football. We obviously have a lot to talk about with it being bye week still. We were going to talk about initially the Crimson Collective, and we'll get into that. But there's been a little bit more pressing news that happened today, this afternoon. Cam Rising went on his weekly radio spot with Bill Riley, decided to be a little candid. We get a buttoned-up Cam most of the time where he gives us, I don't want to say PC answers, but just kind of more of the regular run-of-the-mill answers that we're going to get from a quarterback that's not trying to divulge everything. But with Bill Riley, he got a little candid, and it explained a little bit more of his injury. Let me read the quote that he gave. It says, "I think it's important that I just kind of let everybody know I didn't just tear my ACL. I tore my ACL, meniscus, MPFL, and MCL. That's a lot. That's a lot for his knee. You know, we knew a little bit, at least behind the scenes, that he had the MPFL injury at the end of, after the USC game, the first USC game last year. But things got a little worse after that Rose Bowl game. What are your kind of your impressions from Cam based on this candid conversation?
Yeah, you know, you alluded to this, but let me just give the listener a little bit more context. Rising is very polished with the media. He's a seasoned veteran of like dealing with reporters. Remember, he was a 4-star kid at Newberry Park High School, so he's been dealing with media since he's like 15 years old. So in a media setting, not one-on-one, but in a media setting, scrum, whatever, he will be perfectly polite. And he will answer your question, but more times than not, he's going to answer your question, but he's not really going to say much of anything. He's not really going to offer more than what he has to. So, you know, goes on Bill Riley's show as he does every week, right? That's a NIL-fueled type of thing. And just like I just said, he will answer all of Bill's questions. It's pretty cookie cutter. He doesn't go too much into detail. And every week, Bill, as he needs to do, Bill will ask Cam, how are things going? How's the knee? Are we getting close? And that answer today started sort of like, you know, day by day. And then Rising pauses and he gives the quote that you just said, like, and I wrote this and it's available on KSL.com right now. Rising, like more so than at any point during his career, really like opened up and like bared a bit of his soul. And he's clearly frustrated, like he is seeing and hearing things that, you know, on the message board and social media, and his surgeon, you know, Dr. Neil Elitrosh, is kind of getting crushed now by some fans. So, you know, good for Rising. He opened up a little bit. And as you said, you know, it was what? ACL, MCL, MPFL, and the meniscus. And as you said, some of that, I don't think any of that was really public, right? The MPFL was the USC injury last year that caused him to miss the Washington State game. So he played hurt throughout October, November, December. Obviously, it got worse during the Rose Bowl. Rising did not just injure his knee. Okay. Rising blew out his knee bad. So, you know, in one turn, you know, the notion that, and again, this was coming straight from Rising during the offseason and straight from Kyle Whittingham, you know, during spring, during camp, there was a pretty healthy optimism coming out of Utah that maybe Rising would be ready for the opener. But as we're now like slowly but surely finding out, it was very unlikely that he was going to be ready for the opener in spite of what was being told to the media. So we are now in a position where I think you and I and some other choice people who are really paying attention, covering, you know, Utah football, we thought that maybe he will be ready for Cal, right? Mm-hmm. He is on the doorstep of final clearance. But if you just listen to what Rising said, he will not be rushed. And this is up to the LA-based surgeon. He doesn't trust anybody more than the surgeon. And as we've said for months, this is not up to Kyle Whittingham. This is not up to Andy Ludwig. This is not up to Rising's parents, who are sports savvy people and produced, you know, two Division I athletes. Like, they're no dummies. So this is up to Neil Elitrosh. And until Neil Elitrosh says that Rising can go, Rising is not going to go. So, you know, we'll see what happens on Monday. I mean, I will say, you know, Kyle Whittingham told us on Tuesday that they will not be waiting deep into next week for an answer. They are going to get some sort of clearance, some sort of answer, whatever that is, early in the week, Monday, Tuesday. And if it's Rising, great. And if it's not Rising for Cal, it's going to be Nate Johnson.
And this is one of those things that, you know, we knew the timeline. We're not stupid. We're not being duped. We knew that when he tore his ACL in January, that getting back before the season was difficult. I think you can go back and listen to any one of our podcasts or any of the things that we've tweeted out, and we've been honest with it, right? I think, you know, it's easy for people to say, oh, well, you know, even the media was duped and they were lied to. You know, you can argue that, you know, the coaching staff may not have been as forthcoming, and maybe Cam was part of that as well. But the reality is if you go back and listen to it, they were saying they were optimistic about it. They wanted him. They were hopeful. That's where
they weren't promising Rising would go. They were optimistic. And look, I am willing to take Kyle Whittingham generally. I'm willing to take Kyle Whittingham at face value. I don't feel like I'm being like directly lied to. And yeah, there's always some level of like misdirection or, you know, fibbing a bit with the local media. That's just what it is. But I don't feel like I'm being like straight to my face lied to. So yeah. So if you're listening, spring, summertime, early August, Rising's a limited participant, but we're optimistic that he can go for Florida. And then Rising would go on Bill O'Reilly's show during camps, like, yep, I'm planning to play. And I addressed this in the mailbag, which is out tomorrow, Friday, but all those times that they're offering optimism, of course they're offering optimism.
Why wouldn't you?
What are they going to say? Is Kyle Whittingham going to come out in late March after the first spring practice?
We're not doing
like, well, Rising's out. Blew up his knee.
I mean, I wish he would. I wish he would just.
I mean, that would make our lives easier, sure. But, you know, look, this is where we are. And, like, this is what they said. And this is the timeline. And I think the bottom line is, to your point, we're not doctors, but we can do math. And just shy of 8 months to get ready for Florida? Mm-hmm. It was pretty ambitious. And now we're on, what are we? January. This is still like,
it's still in the timeline. Like, it's still early in the timeline, right? Like, I mean, 9 months has always been an early time, but you know,
for all that,
exactly.
ACL, MCL, meniscus, MPFL. Like, if he shows up for Cal, like, that's a great job of rehab.
Exactly. Well, and this is part of the problem, right? And part of this comes to Kyle Whittingham doesn't want to talk about injuries, and so we're always kind of a little bit behind the eight ball. But part of the problem is there's a lot of rumors going out right now, and the message isn't being controlled simply because there's, you know, Bob and Dan down the street, they heard from a coach on Utah football. You know, we get these rumors all the time. We get DMs. We get all these different things from random people that are telling us what they've heard, right? And we have to kind of filter that out. And you, for the most part, you and I never even address the rumors because they are that, rumors, you know? And so this is the situation where there's so many rumors snowballing now where, you know, Cam is saving himself for the NFL and he doesn't want to play and you know, he's got the yips. I've heard that one a few times. Like, there's a lot of these different things going out there. And while there may be some truth to some of these things, maybe. That's the problem. Maybe. The reality is he's trying to get back there, right? Like, I don't think Cam is going through all this effort to be on a team, to save himself for the NFL or whatever that may be, you know, if you think that he has an NFL career, just to be able to dick around the team, right? Like, I think this is a thing where he's honestly trying. You heard kind of that conviction in his interview with ESPN. He wanted to be able to be on the field. He wanted to get back there. If his knee, you know, worked, that's great. Then he's on the field and he can play. I don't think this is a situation where Cam is trying to mess with people and trying to see, oh, can I milk some NIL money out of people as long as I can? You know, only he knows at the end of the day. But this is a situation where I think he's really trying to get back on the field. It's just he has to feel comfortable with his knee. There's a mental component to that. There's a physical component to that. There's all kinds of components to it that aren't just, okay, Cam looks ready, he's walking. I mean, Pac-12 Media Day, he shows up and he's playing pickleball with different players and everybody was, you know, analyzing his knee and can he move and do this. I get it, right? Like, I get it. You want to see the quarterback. But only Cam can say when he's ready, right? Cam and his doctor, Kyle can't force it. Nobody can force this. This has to be something where it's when he feels ready. Because regardless of his future career in the NFL or whatever, this is health, right? Like, he's got to be able to be healthy. And he doesn't want to sit there and re-injure his knee, you know, just to be able to go through 9 months of rehab, just to be a normal human being, right? This is a tough situation. So I at this point, I'm willing to take him on face value and just say he's trying. It's just not as easy as everybody wants it to be.
And the other sort of factor that has like crept up now is that there seems to be a growing like belief that the coaching staff in the middle of all this like mismanaged the quarterback situation. I disagree.
Yeah.
I mostly disagree.
There's an argument.
There's no doubt an argument. And I get into this in the mailbag. Right? People are paying attention. Like, readers aren't dumb. Like, somebody asked me, essentially, do I think that they mismanaged the QB situation? I'm going with no. And my main point is, if and when Rising is ready, it's his show. So if you are a portal quarterback, and why do you go into the portal? You go into the portal because you're not happy with your current situation and you want to play. So if you are a quarterback in the portal and you want to play, why would you be going to Utah knowing that even if you go through winter and spring and summer, and even if you ascend to start the opener, you know that you're sitting down when Rising is ready? I don't think they mismanaged it. I think they maybe, you know, maybe they're guilty of being overly optimistic and they thought that they would have Rising back by now, but you didn't have much of a need to go to the portal. And furthermore, your room was pretty well stocked. And at some point you had to decide what you had with Nate Johnson and Brandon Rose. And then you had Bryson Barnes, who was like a seasoned backup who you knew that you could call on to start some games. So no, I don't think they've mismanaged this quarterback situation, but I understand why people feel like that.
And it's difficult because you have to realize, as you know, Lynn talked about, the transfer portal is a real thing, right? You've got to be able to manage these players. You've got to be able to make sure that they feel comfortable, and you have to at least give them a chance. But also, Utah lost players to the transfer portal, right? There's 2 4-star guys that they had in the room. Peter Costelli is an example, or I'm blanking on the other kid's name, that they decided to leave, and they could have been in the mix for this, right? We don't know. I mean, there's a good chance that they're probably in the transfer portal anyway, based on Cam's longevity and his ability to be the team's leader. But like, it's not as easy as just saying, hey, you know, quarterback, come here. Everything is being pointed to Cam is going to be the starter whenever he's ready. That could be 3 weeks in the season. It could be 9 weeks into the season. No veteran quarterback, at least with Power 5 experiences, coming into that situation expecting to play and then just saying, oh, I'm going to give my job up to Cam Rising, right? Like Michael Penix Jr., those guys aren't coming to this. Bo Nix, they're not coming to Utah because they think that they, you know, can go sit on the sidelines after Cam. They're coming in to start. They're coming in to play. Now, yes, you can get some your rare exceptions. You know, you can point to the Oklahoma State quarterback who decided to go to Ole Miss and go behind Jackson Dart, and I think he honestly expected to be able to be the starter as well. But, like, it's just rare, especially this last season. There weren't a lot of great quarterbacks in the portal, at least to the level that we're going to be transformative quarterbacks. You look at Florida. Graham Mertz, he's done better than I think many have expected, but he's still not that level of a Michael Penix or a Bo Nix who actually got into a better situation. DJ Uiagalelei, he's a decent quarterback, but he's not some phenomenal quarterback. And even Oregon State's looking at Aiden Childs like, maybe we should make that move, right? This just isn't that easy of a thing. And, you know, you can make the argument that they mismanaged, and, you know, I'll listen to it, and I think I can sympathize with some of it. But at the end of the day, they have to – roster management is a very difficult part of the transfer portal. They have to be able to let the guys that are on the roster have a chance, but you also have to find somebody that's going to mean anything. And if you can't find anybody in the transfer portal that means anything, you're in the same spot. Look at what happened with Charlie Brewer. Look what happened to these other players that they've brought in that just doesn't work. It just doesn't work sometimes, and it's the hardest position because quarterback is so fickle. People want to get in, they want to play, they want to do all this stuff, and it's just a very limited timeline.
It's a giant what if, and like it really doesn't matter, but like you bring up Peter Costelli, and you know, if Costelli and his family had shown a little more patience, you don't know what he could have turned into. And his career has not panned out to really much of anything. So again, not really worth mentioning, but it's a bit of a what if, right? He was a highly touted kid, right? A COVID era recruit that, you know, the staff was pretty high on Costelli, and there just wasn't enough patience from a lot of people. And he was gone before that 21 season was over. He didn't even stick around for the Pac-12 championship game. So who knows if he had stuck around, if there had been, you know, a little more patience, maybe, you know, Utah would not be in this position where they're like sorely missing Rising. Isn't it crazy that, you know, that Utah's 4-1 and like ranked 18th and like, this is what we're talking about. You know, the sky's falling.
It is,
so to speak.
The sky is always falling.
Yeah.
The sky is always falling. Except The sky was not well, I guess it depends on which fan base you're looking into yesterday. The sky is falling for some programs. Utah is in a very good position in others. Yesterday, this being Wednesday, the Crimson Collective, which is the University of Utah's officially endorsed collective, every school has a collective, if not more, they decided to announce that every scholarship player would get a Ram 1500 truck. Now, before everybody freaks out, yes, it is a lease. It is a six-month lease that is reoccurring, that as long as the player stays on scholarship, they are going to be fine and have that truck. Yes, it is not theirs to keep. I don't know the details of when a senior graduates. Do they get an option to buy it? I don't know. I don't honestly care. They get a truck to be able to have while they're an athlete. My DMs have been blown up. My everything has been blown up. I get it. It's a lease. Can we get that off of our chest now? It's over.
It's a lease, guys.
Either way, it's a good opportunity for these Utah athletes, especially as it comes into the snow. A lot of these guys, especially from the south or areas where they're, you know, much less snow, namely California, Texas, all those areas, they're not used to this kind of environment. A truck works. It helps them. I think it was Spencer Fano yesterday that said that a lot of these dorms, especially for some of the freshmen, aren't that close to the university. And so getting to the university in a truck in bad weather is very beneficial, whether it's for 6 months or whether it's for 5 years that they're there. All of them were excited for it. You didn't have them upset because it wasn't a truck given to them. I hate to break it to you, but you know, they're excited for it. They think it's a game changer for recruiting. I don't know. What's your thoughts on this? Is it a good idea, or is it just another ploy to get athletes to come to Utah?
Is it a good idea to give a 20-year-old kid a free car? No, kidding.
I mean, I'll take it. I'm seasoned. Yeah, I can take it.
Take it right now. No, but from like a bigger picture perspective, I mean, look, this is a really like smart, savvy piece of NIL business for the Crimson Collective, something that got national attention yesterday. First time that a school's NIL machine has done something like this. I'll be curious to see if there is a bit of a copycat thing going around, you know, whether it be locally BYU or nationally. I think part of me is a little bit surprised that like something like this hadn't happened yet at some of the like very deep pocketed SEC Big 12 type of schools. But be that as it may, again, big picture, it's a good piece of business. And the Crimson Collective, you know, got to, you know, puff out its chest a little bit. And, you know, Matt Garf was there, you know, doing interviews, and he was on Bill's show this morning, you know, touting this whole thing. So yeah, I mean, it's more good than bad. Let's just hope that kids are responsible and they're not, you know, dumb about this. Not saying that anybody is going to be on Utah's team. What I'm saying is kids sometimes tend to be dumb. You have kids. I don't know. Like, my kid's not really, old enough to make too many mistakes yet. But, yeah, overall, there's more good than bad with it.
And, you know, look, I'm not here to give this free publicity, and I am, I guess, right now because I am doing it. But, you know, I don't want to quite call it a PR stunt, but it is a great opportunity for the collective to be able to get their name out there. And anybody that does this afterward now is copying Utah, right? Whether it is or not, that's the perception, right? Is now people can look at this and say, this is what Utah did. This is all this collective games is. I know a lot of, you know, people call it an arms race, and, you know, that's what NIL is. The reality is this is going to level out. There's going to be an even playing field. NIL, there's going to be some, you know, restrictions and bounds on it. But at the end of the day, if the donors want to give this, that's what it is, right? And at the end of the day, this is also pretty low cost. It's leased cars that are from a local dealership that are part of their fleet. You know, you can talk about tax benefits and everything else for these people involved. It's a win-win. At the end of the day, it did turn into national attention, and it got Utah on the map. They waited a little bit. They wanted to be able to kind of do it. They call it the Utah way, you know, say what you will or whatever that is. I don't know what the Utah way is, but they wanted to do it right. They wanted to, you know, have some community elements associated with it, with community service. Look, I don't really care at the end of the day. I think if it makes people happy and it gets people to come to Utah, I think that's what they want to happen, right? Who am I to poo-poo that idea? I think people need to chill a little bit and not worry so much that a free truck was given. Leased to an athlete.
Leased.
Yes, remember that, please. I don't know.
You know what my real concern is? Again, like, college kids generally don't have a lot of money. right? These football players can't really, I don't think generally
can get
jobs.
But they're given so much stuff, Josh. They're given everything. How can you say they don't have all this money?
I would have at least, look, I'm not Matt Garf and nobody asked my opinion. I would at least have ponied up for the first tank of gas. Have you seen what gas costs?
Yes,
I was
honestly
at Costco. My 15 CRV costs like $55 to fill.
And that might
what
be on the low end.
Cost? That's crazy. Yeah. Come on, guys. Give them the first tank of gas.
Look, you're getting parking tickets. You're getting, I mean, this is honestly like this is tough. I am curious to see when they go all out in that the parking lot across from the football facility, when you go out and see every single spot full with these Ram trucks. I was joking around
with somebody else. So when these trucks start coming out, I'm going to need to see some good vanity plates. I'm going to need like Bad Moon, right, for Cam. I'm going to need to see JJ for Jaquindon Jackson. Like, don't disappoint me, boys. Come on.
Speaking of, I don't think Cam got a truck because he's already got a deal with a different dealership. I'm not going to say that.
That's the quiet part out loud, right?
Also, the one part is international students don't get part of this. So somebody like a Thomas Yasmin can't take part in this because he is an international student and their visas don't allow it. That's the reality of it. That's tough.
Yeah, that's the big that's been the big like downfall, so to speak, of NIL, is that the international kids kind of can't like cash in, so to speak. And that's not just football, right? That's softball,
everything.
Soccer,
mm-hmm.
basketball. There's all kinds of Eastern European kids all over the United States playing major college basketball, and those kids can't cash in. So that sucks, but that is what it is.
It's a tough break. But at the end of the day, look, just let them be. They're college kids. Let them have fun. As long as they're not racing like Georgia players, I think we're okay.
Whoa, I think that's a good place to stop.
We're going to stop now. All right, well, that's our podcast wrapping up the bye week. We'll come back at you next week and get ready as we talk about Cal. But signing off today, it's Josh and Josh. We hope you have a great weekend. Go watch some other football. Don't worry about the Utes playing. They get a win this week. Yay for you. Yay. Talk to you later.